Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. Thanks for listening to the podcast from the Early Morning Late Show.
It's the Early Morning Late Show with Bill Arnold. The Early Morning Late Show. Get your day started right.
Good morning. It's 4 minutes after the hour. So glad you're with us today. It is Friday, October 6th. And let's see. Tomorrow's Saturday, so let's see. What am I going to do? I'm going to sleep in, and then I'm going to get up and eat cereal, possibly with some berries on it. And my friend Terry Esau is going to get up and set a world record. Oh, you think you're better than me? Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely, Bill.
I've been teasing the audience about your world record. Tell our listeners all about that.
So Free Bikes for Kids is an organization that collects, refurbishes, and gives away used bikes. 2 years ago, we actually set the Guinness World Record with 5,512 bikes collected in 4 hours.
Amazing.
We think we can beat that tomorrow, although I'm a little concerned about the forecast. Can you help me and get rid of the rain?
Is it supposed to rain in the morning?
Unfortunately,
okay.
Yeah.
All right. Now, you set a world record 2 years ago collecting over 5,000 bikes in 4 hours. So people just say, hey, I have a bike in the garage and it's not being used. What I can do is take this over. I can give it to you and you're going to fix it up and put it to give it a new life.
We're putting kids back on the street, Bill.
Well, talk about this. This is a fascinating ministry of yours. Or business, or whatever we want to call it. It's a little bit of everything, isn't it? I mean, I know it's a nonprofit.
It's a nonprofit. This kind of started in my garage in 2008 as like this fluky little hobby thing I might do for a couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And now we've given away 38,000 bikes. We're entering into our sixth, seventh, and eighth city. So it's kind of gotten a little out of hand, but in a good sort of way.
So, Terry, you're duplicating what you did here in the Twin Cities in other cities.
Absolutely.
And and what is your next city destination?
Well, we're already, in fact, Atlanta is collecting bikes next week, Saturday. And we're in Madison. We're in Salt Lake City. We're just launching in Portland, Oregon, and Eugene, Oregon, and soon to go into Seattle, Washington, and a few others. I get calls and emails every week from cities around the U.S. and actually around the world saying, hey, we want to do this in our city. Can you help us? So, it's on the move. And we actually think that, you know, within not too many years, we're going to be in 20 cities giving away 30, 40, 50,000 bikes every single year. So,
wow. So
it's kind of,
yeah. So
kind
Terry,
of fun to see what's happening.
Yeah, Terry, if a bike comes in, your staff fixes it up, and then how does someone receive that bike?
Well, first of all, our staff is there to oversee the fixing up of the bikes, but we actually need about 4,000 to 5,000 volunteers over the next 8 weeks to help us clean and refurbish the bike. So please, whatever your skill set or level is, whether you can change a tire or adjust a derailleur or just help us clean bikes, we need you. Go to fb4k.org, click on volunteer. We're open 7 days a week for the next 8 weeks with one day off, Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
And our warehouse is in New Hope. All that information is on our website, but we actually need tons of volunteers.
Mm-hmm. And if I were to volunteer and let's say all I can do is spray WD-40, would I be welcome?
You would be more than welcome.
Really?
We actually need a lot more cleaners than mechanics because, it just seems like it takes longer sometimes to refurbish or to clean bikes than
sure.
it does to refurbish them.
Sure.
But some of the bikes come in they're great. There's nothing wrong with them.
We
actually ask people to bring in gently used bikes.
Yeah.
We prefer not to have bikes that, Evel Knievel had as a kid.
Right. So you wouldn't want my bike as a kid.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Well, Terry, we are excited about your day tomorrow, and I pray that you can break your Guinness World Book record tomorrow and bring in a record number of bikes. And this is obviously for the listeners here in the Twin Cities. Where would they take the bike?
So here's the deal. From 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. tomorrow, you can drop off your bike at virtually any Alina clinic or hospital. There are a couple that are not included. If you go to our website, fb4k.org, there's a map. And we need bikes of all sizes, all kinds, you know, adult-sized bikes as well, tricycles.
Tandems?
Tandems?
Yeah.
Are you trying to get rid of your tandem? Or
no,
what?
I miss my tandem. I had one as a kid. It was great.
Really?
Yeah. So,
What was your first bike?
It was a Schwinn Stingray with the shifter in the middle and the banana seat and the high bars and the spoiler.
And you were the coolest kid in town, right?
Oh, yeah. No one's arguing that, Terry.
Well, hey, help us get bikes tomorrow.
I will indeed.
We need the bikes. I'm a little concerned about the rain, but we will have volunteers at every one of those locations who will take the bike out of your car for you so you don't have to get out, and we'll hand you a tax receipt. So
that's awesome.
Donation is
tax. That's awesome. That's fb4k.com or .org?
.org.
fb4k.org. Terry, thanks so much. Have a great day.
At Free Bikes for Kids.
Awesome. And
thanks, Bill.
Blessings tomorrow. Yep, have a good day.
Thank you, man.
Yep. 10 minutes after the hour, we'll take a short break and then bring on Adam Holtz from Plugged In Ministries. Be back in a minute. Good morning. It's 12 minutes after the hour. It's time to talk movies with our good friend Adam Holtz from Plugged In Ministries. Adam, good morning.
Good morning.
You know, talking.
How are you, Bill?
I'm good. Talking to you makes me actually way more interested in movies. Not that I've gone to see any, but I'm way more interested.
Well, you know, we want to give you the information you need to make good decisions.
Yeah. Now, I want to start with a review I read on Tom Cruise's new movie, which I guess is supposed to be spectacular.
Well, you know, I guess on some levels you could say it's a pretty good movie. It is called American Made, and it's based on a true story, and how true that story really is has been debated since the movie came out. But the upshot is that Tom Cruise portrays a real-life guy named Barry Seal.
Mm-hmm.
The late 70s, Barry is... he's kind of a daredevil. He flies for TWA, if you remember TWA.
Oh, yeah.
Old Trans World Airlines.
Oh, yeah.
Those of us.
I still have freaking flyer miles with them.
Yeah, you probably still have them because they don't exist anymore. So he's bored, and he likes to spice things up. So he is smuggling Cuban cigars kind of on the side, and he's in an airport one day and gets approached by a guy who turns out to be a CIA agent named Schaefer, or maybe he's named Schaefer later, that is doubtful too. And Schaefer says, we want you to do a different kind of clandestine work. And so he basically outfits Tom Cruise with a really fast prop plane to fly over all of those Central American countries in the late 70s and early 80s. You know, if you remember, again, for those of us of a certain age, there was kind of a low-level red thread in Nicaragua and Honduras and El Salvador with the communist insurgents there. So anyway, he gets tasked to do that. But Barry gets detained in Colombia, and getting detained in Colombia in 1980 or so is never a good thing. And Pablo Escobar, who is the head of the drug cartel there, and a couple other guys basically task him with, hey, when you get done making your southern loop, spying on everybody, why don't you stop here and pick up some cocaine and take it back to Florida?
Hmm.
And, you know, why don't you do that with a gun pointed in his face? He doesn't have a whole lot of choice there. And so for the next couple of years, this guy, you know, does this espionage work. He smuggles cocaine. And then it gets crazier when Schaefer says, why don't you take some guns down to Nicaragua and El Salvador and help arm the Sandinistas? And it's a wild, wild tale, basically, of this guy Tom Cruise plays getting deeper and deeper and deeper into just about every kind of illicit activity you can think of. Mm-hmm. Of course, he makes tons of money, and I won't spoil it other than to say it's not a real happy ending.
Yeah.
So it really, it's an interesting film, but it's an R-rated film. You know, pick your content, you know.
Of course.
Alcohol,
it's not for kids.
Drugs, violence, yep. Sexuality.
Yeah, so in other words, I'm not recommending it, but I'm just hearing that it was a great story.
It's a great story, but it also probably isn't a true story.
Of course.
Since the movie came out, some people have come out and said, we're not even sure that this guy ever worked for the CIA.
Yeah.
So,
interesting metaphor, though, for the slippery slope of sin, isn't it? How you start.
Well, it is. Yeah, I think that's absolutely right, and it is a slope that this character, Tom Cruise, really slides down.
Mm-hmm. Okay, how about My Little Pony?
And now for something completely different that they used to say on
from,
the Monty Python.
Yeah.
My Little Pony, the movie, comes to big screens, and I think, again, here's a franchise that's been around 40 or so years, and this is a movie that really is aimed at little girls, and parents might be rolling their eyes, but it's actually a pretty nice little animated movie, and it deals with the ponies who live in Equestria, and the main character is a pony named Twilight Sparkle, and she is organizing essentially a friendship festival, and then the bad guy shows up, and her name is Tempest Shadow, and she wants to steal the pony's magic powers and give them to a really bad guy named Storm King. And all that might sound, you know, just a little bit over the top, but this is a movie that surprisingly really majors on some great themes, on friendship, on how do we continue to want to do the right thing when we experience disappointment, when people disappoint us, or when ponies disappoint us in this case. And there's a lot, I think, for kids to talk about, and it's done well enough that even our guy who reviewed the movie, Bob Hoos, came back and said, man, this is a movie I'd take my kids to, my grandkids to, and we could really enjoy it together. And honestly, there aren't that many movies that you can say that about. So I think if you have young children, especially if you have young girls, this one leans probably more female, in a more female-centric direction, go to this movie. Have a good time.
Nice, nice. Adam, let's talk about The Stray, but I want to go to break first. And I love the idea that there's a Christian dog movie, which, you know, it's always going to pull on my heartstrings. I'm talking to Adam Holtz from Plugged In Ministries. We'll be back in just a minute. Good morning. 20 minutes after the hour, I'm talking to Adam Holtz from Plugged In Ministries. All right, I'm grabbing my Kleenex, Adam. Let's talk about The Stray, that little Pluto.
I need the Kleenex for The Stray.
Oh, yeah. Here we go. Where's my Kleenex?
Often bring that out. The Stray is about, in part, a dog named Pluto, but it's really about a real-life guy. This is based on a true story, too, named Mitch Davis. Mitch Davis was an aspiring screenwriter, moved to California, didn't make it as a screenwriter, but ends up as an executive for a movie company, and ends up working all the time and has this sort of moment of realization that, yeah, it's his dream job, but it's killing his family, and it's especially killing his relationship with his 9-year-old son, Christian. And about this time, they adopt this stray dog that shows up and sort of keeps showing up in a sort of semi-miraculous kind of way. At one day, their little toddler wanders off, and the dog's the one who helps them find it. And they sort of take that as a sign from God, so to speak. So anyway, Mitch and his family move to Colorado to try to get a fresh start and for Mitch to reprioritize his life. And he and his son, Christian, and the dog Pluto go on a mountain camping trip with some friends, and from there things get pretty dramatic. Let's just say that there's lightning involved.
Okay.
And it's kind of the true story of what happens after they have this dramatic encounter with lightning on the mountain.
Okay.
So it's it feels like a real story in that it kind of meanders. At points, the narrative kind of slows down a little bit, and you're not sure which story they really want to tell. But that said, this really is a movie that majors on the importance of family, making the right choices to be able to love your family well, and sometimes even what that might cost you. And Mitch Davis is somebody with a lot of Hollywood experience. This is a really polished movie. It feels like it's been really professionally done. And it just tells his life story, really.
Mm-hmm. And I went on the website and looked up and saw a picture of Pluto. Adorable
yeah.
dog. And Pluto has heterochromia. How about that for a big word?
Is that meaning he has different kinds of chrome?
Nope, he has different colored eyes. Two different colored
different
eyes.
Different colored eyes.
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
I had to throw you some curveball today, Adam.
Yeah, you know, heterochromia, I will integrate that into my next review if I can.
Yeah. Okay, let's talk about Question of Faith.
Question of Faith is another Christian movie that opened in theaters a couple weeks ago, actually last week. And it is one of these ensemble cast movies. You know, these movies that have lots of different characters and their stories seem totally unrelated, and slowly they're woven together. One of the characters is a struggling pastor. One of them is a young teenager. Another one is a young singer who's having some health problems. And in the midst of the story, the thing that sort of binds them all together is a teenager who's texting while driving, and there's a tragedy that occurs. And kind of the crux of the story is, how do we respond to tragedy, and how do we find God when we're trying to make sense of something that, honestly, there's no way you can make sense of it. When
mm-hmm.
someone's life is cut short in a tragic, seemingly random way, how do we process that? And so this is a story about trusting God, as the title, A Question of Faith, really symbolizes, and how these people do it. And I think unlike some Christian movies, maybe older Christian movies, this one doesn't tie everything up in a nice, neat, pat bow. I think that it does a good job of wrestling realistically with some pretty tough questions.
Mm-hmm.
What does it look like to try to trust God when we don't have the answers?
Yeah. Adam, Blade Runner 2049, real quick.
Blade Runner 2049, critics are raving about it. It's
mm-hmm.
obviously a sequel to Ridley Scott's epic 1982 movie that is really considered a classic, but both this movie and the original Blade Runner are also R-rated movies.
Okay.
With a fair bit of nudity, a lot of violence, really some pretty gritty themes.
Okay.
And so I think, unfortunately, this isn't one that I'm going to be able to recommend, even though I would also acknowledge that it's getting great reviews.
Okay.
Harrison Ford reprises his role from 1982. And I think, you know, it's one that if you're interested in it, it definitely is worth coming to PluggedIn.com to check out our review and see all of the details on what's happening content-wise here.
Mm-hmm. So, Adam, we didn't get a chance to talk about all of these, but in conclusion, I'm looking at My Little Pony, The Stray, A Question of Faith, Blade Runner 2049, The
yep.
Mountain Between Us, Battle
yeah.
of the Sexes, Flatliners. I've got $10 burning a hole in my pocket. Which one should I go see?
Well, get your daughter or granddaughter and go see My Little Pony, or get your box of Kleenex and go see The Stray.
Awesome. Thanks, Adam. Always a delight
All
having
right.
you on the show.
Thanks, Bill.
Yep. Have a great weekend.
26, yeah, you too.
26 minutes after the hour, we'll be back with Ed Stetzer at 20 minutes to the hour. Be back in a minute. It is half past the hour. We're going to have a little break for news. And then Ed Stetzer is going to be with us. We love Ed. Back in a minute. Good morning. It is 25 minutes until the top of the hour. Happy Friday. We've got Ed Stetzer coming up in about 5 minutes. Looking forward to our conversation with him. But for now, all of us have blind spots in knowing how we relate to others. Tim Muehlhoff says this and something called emotional contagion.
Communication is so frustrating. It's rooted in our perception. And all of us have blind spots. And so we do need the scripture, we need the Holy Spirit, we need fellow believers to come alongside of us and say, hey, listen, I got to tell you, the minute that person walks in the room, you just change. There's something different about you. Man, you give a lot of grace to a lot of people, but when it comes to your middle son, I just don't see you giving very much grace to that person. And it might truly be a blind spot that I'm not aware of it. Or in the book, I mentioned something called emotional contagion. This is an interesting idea that I might think that I'm doing fine with a coworker. I'm not saying anything overtly negative towards this person, even though I have a slow burn towards this person. Psychologists say that actually the negativity bleeds out and deeply affects that person, that person picks up on the fact that I have an issue against him or her. That's why Paul says, deal with the anger before the sun goes down. Or that's going to lead into these relationships and poison it even before you can have productive conversations.
Oh, he makes me think. That was Dr. Tim Muehlhoff. If you want to hear that interview in its entirety, go to myfaithradio.com. Check it out. Tim Muehlhoff, or Creating a Healthy Conversational Climate. We'll take a short break, and then we've got Ed Stetzer with us. Be back in a minute.
Pain is predictable. You don't have to guess. Guaranteed, it's coming. Because anytime you confront foolish thinking, when two value systems clash, or you have a contest of opinions and ideas, it's painful. Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. Moms and dads, if you have teens or preteens, you know what I'm talking about. Anytime your kid lashes out, pain is just around the corner. When wrong motives and desires are exposed, and when your teen is confronted, limited, or restricted, hey, it's painful. Effective parenting doesn't mean you need to make everyone feel better. In fact, conflict may be the bold blinking neon sign that God's healing work has begun in your family. So when pain shows up in your home, don't run from it. Use it.
Find more help from Mark Gregston at parentingtodaysteens.org.
Hi, I'm Ted Ross with the Faith in Life Minute. If you and your family are running from one activity to the next, listen to this encouragement from Dr. Linda Mental on how to slow down and get balance back into your life.
If you're just running from activity to activity and you just feel like you're the taxi cab mom or dad who's just constantly on the run and it's too much, then a lot of times I'll say to families, just cut something out. Just decide you're not going to do it. Learn to say no and bring back the family meal. If the schedule is so crazy that people can't even eat one meal together, you really need to rethink that, because the benefits of eating a meal together are absolutely astounding. If you did that, your kids would do better with nutrition, with academic performance. They have a lower risk for delinquent behavior, and that really seems to me like a really small price to pay for some really big results that can make things so much better in your family.
Find more healthy tips for your family from Dr. Linda Mental at myfaithradio.com.
Good morning. It's 20 minutes until the top of the hour. Very glad you're with us today. I have Ed Stetzer on our line. He is the president of the Billy Graham Center for Evangelism at Wheaton. He's done interim pastoring. He still might be doing that. I got to check with that. And he's a blogger, Christianity Today. He's everywhere. Ed, good morning.
Good morning. I don't know if I'm everywhere, but I'm happy to be on your show today.
Trust me, you're everywhere. I appreciate you taking time to be with us. I know how busy you are. Are you still doing interim pastoring?
Yeah, I am. I'm the interim pastor at Moody Church in downtown Chicago.
That's awesome. We've been blindsided this week, Ed, with this shooter in Las Vegas. It's just absolutely consumed us. It's absolutely heartbreaking. So let's talk about that. Let's get your perspective on it. Who was this guy, and why did he do this?
Well, you know, of course, I don't know. I don't know much about him other than what you've read and I've read. Mm-hmm. I think ultimately evil's real in the world, and I think it's interesting that we often are unable to address that. There are two issues that I think come through in this moment that are maybe harder for us to address. One is that evil is real, and the other is we don't know how to even speak about death. And so the evil, obviously, is evident and real. Now, again, I don't know what other factors will be there, and I think mental illness is real, and I think all these things will be discussed, but ultimately you have to keep coming back to the idea there's real evil here. And the second thing is, you know, I went and spoke at a kind of a secular company yesterday, and they asked me to talk about, you know, Christian worldview and how does this fit into that. And one of the things I said is I think for a lot of people, they don't really know how to respond because they don't have a familiarity with the idea that evil is real. But also I talked about how, you know, we have to deal with death now and mm-hmm. because of evil. And we Americans, you know, the Victorians would never talk about sex. They would have like euphemisms for it and everything else because they were terrified of talking about it in their culture in Victorian England. And I think that's kind of the way we are about death. I mean, we don't even call it somebody died, they passed away. We don't know what to say afterwards or speak of it. And I think both of these things that we got to use talking about evil, and in this case, we got to use talking about death.
We have sped the process up, too. I remember when hearing stories of my grandfather when he died, and of course they'd bring the casket into the living room and of the house, and it would be like 4 or 5 days of people coming over every night to start processing and mourning. And now we just pretty much kind of almost we're at a drive-through phase.
Yeah, we sort of hide it away. And I mean, people used to prepare the body, and now it's fascinating. I was there when my sister died. She died at a young age. And it was as if once she was dead, no one could be near her body. And it was as, okay, quick, take it away as quickly as you can.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of this culture's just fear of death. I mean, here's the reality. We look to the scriptures. Death is not celebrated. You know, there is a sense that it is a you know, absent with the body, present with the Lord. But still, it speaks of death in ways that are generally negative. But it doesn't speak of death in ways that are avoidable. In other words, you're don't rush away from the moment, recognize that we're all going to die one day. And the writers of Scripture knew that, engaged that, often wrestled with that. And I think throughout the ages, people have engaged and wrestled with that. And so yesterday when I spoke at this business, I talked about kind of the big ideas. Why don't we talk about these big ideas? And one of the big ideas is there's life, there's death, and you got to be ready for both.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think our generation, Ed, was probably, you know, have you seen a dead person or just a beautified dead person?
Yeah. It's a good point. I know people might be driving thinking, well, this is really strange conversation, but it's an important conversation because as Christians, we ought to be able to speak of, you know, for me to live is Christ, is to die is to gain. Mm-hmm. We ought to be able to speak of other things that really speak of the brevity of life. It's just a vapor, and then it's gone. You know, so I think those are things that I think are key for us to understand.
Yeah. Ed, talk a little bit about the response to people saying that prayer is not enough. Or we need something more than prayer.
Well, at first we do, but that wasn't, you know, so I wrote this article because I got a little frustrated. This started in San Bernardino, and for full context, it wasn't that, you know, certain politicians were attacking prayer. They were attacking other politicians who sent thoughts and prayers and did not act on legislation that they thought there should be acted on. So in other words, they're saying, yeah, thoughts and prayers are okay, but you need more than thoughts and prayers, you need action. Now, my reality is I think prayer is not political. Prayer is powerful. And so I wrote in Christianity Today about how we need to call people to prayer, and we need to pray now. See, I'm not in Las Vegas, so I can pray. I'm not a lawmaker, so right now this is what I'm doing, is I'm going to pray. Now I can get engaged and involved, and I have actually, but I can't pray. I can't not pray because now people think this is a political act. It's not. It's a powerful act. And so I wrote an article asking people to pray for, you know, the victims and their families, to pray for. Pray for leaders, you know, pray for the sheriff, the mayor, the governor, the president, and then pray ultimately. I mean, then prayer isn't the only thing. There's action that needs to be taken, and people will debate those actions. But for me, I don't think that precludes me just saying, I just call before my Heavenly Father, say, Lord, we need your help here.
Yeah. It's an opportunity, isn't it, to humble ourselves, Ed, and just try to figure out a way to have unity with people.
Yeah, I think so. And I think that's a good way to look at it. And so you know, I prayed personally. I pray with others. You know, Max Lucado published an article in USA Today that we can pray personally. We can pray with others. Yeah. So I think ultimately we just got to find the time, space, and to pray. But also too, I mean, in my case, I'm giving. I can't go to Vegas right now, but people are giving blood in and around Vegas. You know, I talked to two pastors in the day after,
mm-hmm.
You know, all of them were calling people to give blood. They, I mean, again, you hear about these things, you know, give blood. You think of that as something like from an episode of ER, we're calling people to give blood, but really in a situation where 500 wounded, they need people to give blood. And so Christians, churches rallied their people to give, be blood donation stations.
Yeah, it's been powerful. I talked to a pastor friend of mine from Las Vegas yesterday, and he said someone from his church waited outside in, you know, 90 plus degree heat for 8 hours to try to donate blood. And people from grocery stores and restaurants would come out with food and water and umbrellas to, you know, to shade from the sun. And after waiting in line for 8 hours, he got up there and they'd run out of packets to withdraw blood. So they said, thanks.
Well, that's encouraging.
It is encouraging. Yeah, it's great. Ed, let me take a break. When we come back, I'd like to continue our conversation. Talking to Ed Stetzer, it is 14 minutes until the top of the hour. I'll be right back. Sunshine today, but hopefully it will come out again. It's 11 minutes until the top of the hour. I'm speaking to Ed Stetzer, president of the Billy Graham Center for Evangelism at Wheaton College, among other things. Ed, I want to ask you a little bit about an article you wrote for Christianity Today about what's going on in the NFL. I've been learning and hearing quite a bit from my listeners when I bring this subject up, and I'm finding myself humbled, as I often do, because I can't understand what I can't understand. So I would love for you to weigh in on this as to how we can have better dialogues between each other.
Well, I wrote an article first, and one of my themes was, I really think you ought to listen to the concerns that Kaepernick had raised, because, you know, most of your audience, just because as a percentage of the population who are evangelicals, are white evangelicals, and I think overwhelmingly polls show that, you know, they just reject the idea of what's going on. And so I want to encourage people there, partly because, and I also want to defend his speech, because I think ultimately Christians have some speech that will be negatively perceived by people. You know, the reason we have the First Amendment is because of unpopular speech. Now, I know that we're talking about someone doing it on their job. I you know, that the NFL is a job. I know all those things. But I also wrote in there that I thought that the timing was unhelpful. I really, you know, think that there are better times and better places, because ultimately this has now become a conversation about patriotism rather than about the issues that Kaepernick raised. Now, what I thought was interesting was a reaction from some of my coworkers and colleagues. I actually had two colleagues who worked, well, actually employees. So people wrote me notes and said, you let your employees disagree with you? And I said, where do you work that your employees aren't allowed to disagree with you? But anyway, so both of them wrote responses, in addition to Charlie Dates, who's an African-American pastor. Different themes, Charlie and John Richards, they're both African-American, and they basically put a different perspective. And particularly they wanted to say, you know what, there's never a time when African-Americans are allowed to protest. I mean, there's never a time that and white people love to say, well, you shouldn't do it then, you shouldn't do it then, or this is the wrong person, et cetera, et cetera. And I actually agree. Now, again, part of it was the dialogue we had. I actually agree with President Obama's comments. And President Obama's comments were he wished Kaepernick could sit down with some of the families of military, maybe Gold Star families who've lost a loved one. And he then said, and I wish some of the people who were so objecting to Kaepernick could sit down and listen to his concerns. I think my original article was sort of driven by we should talk through those things. But I think by broadening the perspective, well, we learn from one another, you know, and I think that's key. Is so it's unfortunate. I think President Trump's comments and tweets really were unhelpful and inflamed the situation. I think the vast majority of Americans, according to polls, actually think that to be the case. So in my article, I basically wrote about President Trump's response was unhelpful, but Kaepernick's approach to the protest was unhelpful. But I exhorted everyone to listen to the concerns that he raised. I think they're important concerns, and I think we ought to ask why this is happening.
Mm-hmm. Has it improved anything so far?
The protest?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know. I mean, I wish See, part of the thing I was concerned about is what happened is that now this is not a conversation about the concerns Kaepernick raised. This is now a conversation about patriotism,
mm-hmm.
and which is an important conversation to me anyway, but it's not the original conversation. And so has it helped anything? I don't know. A lot of people sort of brought attention to his concerns. I don't know that it's done that. I think it's polarized, both because of the actions of Kaepernick in the beginning, who really was just at the time, I don't know much about football, but I'm understanding he's right now an unsigned quarterback. When the President of the United States basically says you should get fired at your job for doing something he disagrees with, then I think that elevated it to a whole new level. People were taking a knee all over. The example I sort of wrote, what if we had a President Hillary Clinton at this time, and she was speaking at, say, Harvard, and she said, man, if you hold these views of marriage, you should be fired from here. Matter of fact, all schools should fire their professors who believe such thing. And for a lot of evangelicals, that's not an implausible situation. I don't think that the President of the United States needs to get involved in employment discussions and who should be fired because they disagree with us and are taking actions we don't want to. So has it helped? I don't know. Mm-hmm. That as a whole, I think it's polarized. And maybe I hope some people have listened to the concerns of that Kaepernick has raised. I just don't know.
Ed, in the marketplace of ideas, do we want to force people to lose their jobs because we may or may not agree with them?
Well, and therein is the big deal. And do we want the president to do this as well? Now, keep in mind, as evangelicals, you know, we've seen this already, right? We've seen the president of Mozilla forced out of his job for donating money to a campaign to support traditional marriage in California. We see in people right now in places are afraid to say what they believe about the authority of Scripture, about what the Bible teaches about morality, because they're afraid to lose their job. So what I said to my article was, listen, if you're a Christian, you might want to speak up on this just because you could be next. Now, I'm not saying that the only reason. I think you should look at the reasons behind the protest, things of that sort. So it's not simply for our own selfless motivation, but the reality is we hold some unpopular views as well. And if we have people calling us out to be fired, and already in very limited places, very, very limited places, that's happened, I think ultimately we ought to be those who are first to speak up for the speech of others.
Mm-hmm. And on Monday Night Football, within 1 week, there's been a loss of approximately 2 million less viewers. So at this time of all the turmoil that we have and distress, what's the message America needs most?
Gosh, I don't know. We need an argument over football. I think what we need is, I mean, there's Las Vegas, there's North Korea. I mean, there's the Iran deal that I believe we're about to declare unhelpful. You know, there's
my receding hairline. There's all kinds of stuff, Ed.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't put that at the same level, but certainly a cause for personal concern for
all
you.
Right, yeah, thank you.
But these issues are real, and I think ultimately this has become, not because of Kaepernick's actions, but ultimately because of President Trump's action, this has become something that a lot of people were focused on in a way that was an unhelpful way to be focused on it. And again, I found both of their actions unhelpful, but I think there are big issues for us to address. NFL issues are probably not among them.
Mm-hmm. So if you could get in the pulpit and preach to all of America on Sunday, what would your message be?
Well, it wouldn't be about that.
Okay.
That's funny, because I'm being an interim teaching pastor at Moody every week. I write commentary for Christianity Today,
uh-huh.
but I preach the Bible and the gospel at Moody Church. If I had a cultural commentary section, I would say what we need right now, and everyone had to read it, I would say what we need right now as Christians is to recognize the world's broken and lost, and a lot of bad things are happening. What we need to be is about the mission of Jesus, showing and sharing his love in the midst of a broken and hurting world. I'd want to encourage people to hear the words of Jesus, who said, as the Father has sent me, so send I you, and to live on mission to the context where we find ourselves.
Ed, that was just eloquent.
Well, thank you, brother. I'm passionate about it.
No, I can tell, and it really comes through, and this is why I love having you on the show, and I so appreciate
it. Well, I love being on. Appreciate it.
Well, thank you. I know you're so busy, and whenever you make time to be on the show, I always get kind of excited thinking, oh, Ed made time for us. That's so nice. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yep, have a great weekend.
You too, man. God
yep,
bless.
You bet. It is 3 minutes until the top of the hour. We'll take a short break, and then when we come back, we'll kind of wrap the big show up. It is 2 minutes until the top of the hour. I'm going to my Bible study now, which I'm very excited about. And as it says in Isaiah 26, verse 4, which I brought up earlier in the program, trust in the Lord forever, for the Lord himself is the rock eternal. That's the refuge. That's the place you go and you are safe. from this dangerous world, but we live in the world, and let's take our hope and our joy and go share it with the lost. Let's have a passion for the lost. All right. I will see you on Monday. Have a great weekend, everyone. Thanks for listening to the Early Morning Late Show podcast. These conversations are available because of your prayerful and financial support. Make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of the Early Morning Late Show, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and grow the impact of the Early Morning Late Show. Connecting.